This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. Today I'm honored to have a special guest on, Dr. Keith Smith of the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. And I wanted to have Dr. Smith on because I think it's very timely. We're now in the beginning of the horse race for the next congressional race, and everybody's positioning themselves and lining up like they've either done something, they're going to do something, or what they did didn't count. And people are getting overwhelmed. I hope they're not. I hope they're following what happened over the past several years and are going to hold the people who are in there accountable, and that they're not going to wiggle out of what they've done, which is to damage our healthcare system. Dr. Smith, like myself, is on the front line. He's a practicing physician, a surgeon, and he gets it. And everything that they've done to this point, the way they, in my opinion, the way they passed this Affordable Care Act was to gin up fear. And the whole bit of it was doctors are the cause of the cost of medical care being so expensive. We're trying to cut feet off and take tonsils out just to make a buck. And it's all about having health insurance. And if you have health insurance, then you'll be able to afford health care, quality health care. That was the caveat that they actually snuck in there. And and people have they drank the Kool-Aid. Now reality check. Now that it's being implemented, it's really obvious to people who've been affected that it's more expensive, and that if you somehow navigate the system and actually get one of these health plans, it's very restrictive. You can't see the doctor that you want to see. Your out-of-pocket costs are crazed, so that even if you do carry it, good luck paying the deductible, which I've seen upwards of $10,000 out-of-pocket before the insurance kicks in. So it's really obvious, if you're living it, that having health insurance does not equal access to health care. Yet I know they're going to continue to try to sell this bad medicine as if you're lucky to have it. And what I wanted Dr. Smith to come on to talk about is about free market medicine. We talk about it on the show quite a bit, and I've been writing about it on a recent blog, that's the answer to Obamacare. It's not waiting for Congress to fix it. It's not waiting for the Republicans to get in. It's not waiting to jerry-rig the nonsense that they've framed as the answer to our healthcare system. It's opting out. And I said it before, but I know people find it hard to believe, but it's cheaper not to go through the healthcare system, not to access your medical insurance. It's easier to pay out of pocket. And what Dr. Smith did is he put his money where his mouth was, and he created the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, which is a state-of-the-art, multidisciplinary surgery center in Oklahoma, where their prices are actually on the internet. You can go and see exactly what it costs to have a procedure done, from soup to nuts. And with that introduction, Dr. Smith, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today.
I'm honored to be with you. Thanks for asking me.
Well, I had to, because you are the maven. I mean, you were the person who started this whole, really started this movement of, I'm not going to take it anymore, and I'm going to handle my own business as a physician. And, I'm going to ask you a loaded question, but you're out there in the middle of doing this. How much pushback did you get from other physicians when you thought this up?
I didn't get much pushback initially. Some of my partners at the surgery center wondered, what it would all lead to. Dr. Steve Vontae and I have run the surgery center for 17 years now, and everything like this that we have done has turned out to be a good decision. So we didn't really get any pushback from other physicians. One of the reasons we did it was all of the pushback that we had gotten in an anti-competitive way from the local health cartel, the big hospitals and the big carriers working together. I shouldn't hesitate to use the word collude, mm-hmm. They basically colluded, worked together to see to it that, by manipulating deductibles and copays and all other shenanigans, that it was difficult for patients to actually find their way to our surgery center where financially it made sense for them. So part of the reason we did this was because they were very threatened by us, the quality and the pricing at our facility. So I see our putting prices online as more of a pushback. Mm-hmm. In response to our having put our prices online, there's been a creepy silence, just a very, very creepy silence. The only response we hear from the big hospitals or the carriers are that, you know, this is a flash in the pan. Surgery Center of Oklahoma is a niche phenomenon. It's not going to endure. This is a silly idea that will go by the wayside. When you look nationally, and you know, the Wall Street Journal had a long article a couple of days ago about price transparency in healthcare, and it's really going viral. And the big self-employed groups are demanding price transparency. And this is an idea that I believe now is unstoppable, and I think the silence is partly because the truth is on our side. And how do you push back? I mean, how do you get in front of a microphone and say, you know, upfront pricing is a bad idea. Prices in healthcare should be secret. I mean, how do you defend that?
You can't. You really can't. And when you look at, I talked to Dr. Jane Orion of the AAPS, the executive director, and she told me that people, that there were price wars starting, that people would come and price out at your center and then go to the hospital and say, can you beat this? Or the hospital would try to beat this and try
right.
to. So it's driving the cost of healthcare down in Oklahoma, is it not?
Yeah, and not just here in Oklahoma. There's definitely a lot of fear from our competitors and even from the big hospitals. They don't like to see patients on their surgery schedule suddenly vaporize and go to the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. They don't like to see that. And so they're having to match or try to match our prices every time that they can in order to stem the loss of business that our pricing and quality represents. One of the more interesting things that's happened is I still get regular emails from patients all over the United States that are basically thank you notes where they say, you know, we were going to come to your facility, but instead we printed out your price list and held that in one hand while we held a plane ticket in the other hand and walked into our local hospital and said, match it or we're gone. And so one of the more dramatic examples was a fellow in Georgia who was quoted $40,000 for a prostate surgery that's listed on our website for $3,600. That includes everything, surgeon, anesthesia, and facility. So his thank you note basically said, you know, thank you, you saved me $36,000, and you didn't even do the case. Yeah. So there is a usefulness for our pricing as reference pricing all over the country, and lots of medical facilities and hospitals are scrambling trying to figure out how to copy us. And frankly, I'm helping some of them. There's a surgery center that just opened or is just about to open in Virginia that I helped them. I mean, I gave them all of the information and advice that I possibly could, and they're basically doing exactly what we've done. So we're going to see a lot more of this. So it's going to be all over the country, and that was one of our goals, was to show the people in the United States that free market principles apply in healthcare and to inspire others to do it.
I think that people have been told somehow that free market and quote-unquote capitalism is evil and it's all about ripping people off and it's not fair. And it's really the opposite. I mean, it's been, as you said at the beginning, a cartel and collusion that's gone on with a brilliant marketing campaign. And I don't think it's stopping. I think they're going to ramp up their marketing campaign to make it seem like if you're not part of a big healthcare system, somehow you're a bad doctor. If you don't do maintenance or certification and all these hurdles, these artificial hurdles that they're starting to create in order to make themselves appear to be more valuable, I think maybe that's the eerie silence a little bit of what they're trying to do. Have you seen any of that?
Yeah, I do. There are so many barriers to entry into our field, and while there are a lot of primary care doctors that are moving to cash-based practices, which is great, it's more difficult for facilities like mine to pull this off because of the government involvement, the cronyism, and the corporatism that exists. Whenever I have this conversation with someone who's on the other side, it's always very disarming for them when I tell them that I'm no defender of the current system. The current system is not a free enterprise system, and that's very disarming when someone says, yeah, you know, you want free markets in healthcare. Look where it's gotten us. Well, we haven't had free markets in healthcare since the late 1950s. What we have now is government and business working together, this public-private partnership. In the old days, in the 1700s, 1600s, they called it mercantilism. And then later in the United States or in Europe, they called it fascism. But this cronyism, this unholy alliance between business, the big corporate healthcare players, and government is the reason we're where we are. And it's just a complete distortion of pricing, quality. There's a complete disruption of the allocation of healthcare resources because of all of the government interventions. And the bottom line is the federal government is to blame for everything we're seeing that's wrong with healthcare. And the notion that more federal government intervention is a good thing to bring us out of this is ludicrous.
I absolutely agree. And I want to tease that apart a little bit more because people don't understand. I get it. We're talking shorthand to each other right now. But what is the thing? How did government insert itself in a fee-for-service, doctor-patient, one-on-one relationship? How did they put their foot in the door? How did they do it?
It really began, and I am welcome to accept modifications of this timeline, but it really began with Roosevelt. When he had wage and price controls, the only way to actually provide more benefit to workers who were valuable was to provide benefits that to companies were expensible. So health insurance became a service that was purchased by businesses rather than individuals. And very few people had health insurance during Roosevelt's time because it wasn't necessary. The price of health care was affordable for almost everybody. So that was the first intervention. The next thing that happened that was a big intervention was passage of a bill called the Hill-Burton Act, which created all of these government community hospitals. And just like any government program, they couldn't get enough loot. There just wasn't enough money on the planet now for these government hospitals, and it's no coincidence that shortly thereafter we got Medicare and Medicaid. Two programs that ostensibly were meant to help the elderly and poor get health care, but really pulling the veil back were meant to line the pockets of the corporate health care machine that was born with the Hill-Burton Act. The Medicare and Medicaid was probably the most distorting of all of the influences, and physicians wanted no part of Medicare and Medicaid when it first came on board, and the federal government successfully bribed the physicians in the United States to come on board. There's still a few holdouts that have never taken a dime of government money. But in order to get the physicians to come on board, the government basically said, we will pay whatever you bill. And that was enough to take the physicians under the wing of the federal government. And the next thing that happened was Richard Nixon's HMO Act, which created the infrastructure for the creation of the HMOs, the PPOs, and the cartelization of healthcare. And you can look at Hillary Clinton's health care plan, which, while defeated, the Republicans, led by Newt Gingrich, basically gave us all of the Clinton health care plan through a bill called Kennedy-Kassenbaum, or the HIPAA, as we know it now. Much of what was in the Clinton health care plan was given to us subsequently by the Republicans. And, of course, all of these bills, all of this legislation, like anything else that oozes out of Washington, D.C., it just lines the pockets of the people who write and promote it. Now, and then we had George Bush, who gave us Medicare Part D, which was, the purpose was to line the pockets of Big Pharma. And the, you know, the big pharmacy companies, rather than deal with insurance companies or deal with patients for the revenue, they now are just, they have a direct plug in to the trough of taxpayer money. And that was the purpose of Medicare Part D. I always think of Albert Camus, the French philosopher, who whose famous quote is, "The welfare of the masses is always the alibi of tyrants." And all of these government interventions in healthcare fit this. You know, and now we have the final coup. The Unaffordable Care Act, or Obamacare, is meant to completely relieve the insurance companies from needing a customer service department. They're completely plugged in now to the taxpayer trough, and they're going to get their money. They're going to get their money through subsidies. They're going to get their money through the penalties that people pay if they don't buy their product. You know, in a free market, if somebody has a product they want to sell and nobody wants it, you go out of business. But in this crony market, if you have an insurance product that no one wants to buy, then you go to your legislator and you mandate its purchase, or you penalize people. So we're not in a free market. The government interventions are endless. I've listed the highlights. There are many, many, many more. But that's just an overview.
That was an eloquent overview. And with that, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that allergy season in Georgia is year-round? Beginning in July through November, ragweed is the predominant pollen. But February through May, tree pollen causes allergy symptoms. Grass pollen occurs from mid-May through the beginning of July. If you suffer from daily nasal congestion, sneezing, runny nose, headache, ear clogging, or popping, or a chronic cough, these symptoms may be due to allergy and not infection. You should also think of allergies if there is no fever, chills, or colored mucus. Treatment should include nasal salt water sprays over the counter or antihistamines that do not cause drowsiness. If you have persistent headaches, a decrease in your sense of smell, or nosebleeds, you should see an ear, nose, and throat physician. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. And I was just speechless in the break. I was talking to my producer about how eloquently you distill that. And if people were listening, they would understand how we ended up in this system. It's about money. It's about corporatism. And it's about a very uneven playing field. And doctors and patients are holding the bag, where we're supposed to thank them for ruining the healthcare system and actually causing a lot of pain. And the pain is just going to start. It's just the beginning of it. I've heard and spoken with progressive-minded people who tout the fabulousness of socialized medicine. I mean, if you don't like socialized medicine, then you're a racist, sexist, you want poor people to die, you name it. They've demonized you, and I have a feeling that they don't even understand what they're arguing for. They don't read very much. They just hear how you're supposed to be able to walk in any doctor's office and get whatever you want for free, and that's what they do in Europe, and that's what we need. But that's not true, is it?
No, it's not. You're reminding me, I recently reread my margin notes in one of my favorite books by Albert J. Nock, Our Enemy, the State, and he talks about, he excoriates anyone who emotionalizes a challenge to their thinking rather than sees the challenge as an opportunity to root out any inconsistencies in what we think and believe and hold dear as assumptions. And when I have this conversation about healthcare with someone who's a big fan of the concept of socialized medicine, oftentimes the facts seem to just not matter. And I see this challenge to the idea of the utopia of socialized medicine being emotionalized rather than having the conversation and seeing that as an opportunity to rethink. But the facts are very clear, and here's one. The first patients who arrived at our surgery center when I put my prices online were Canadians. Now think about what that means. I mean, these people were flying down from Quebec and Ottawa and Vancouver and having surgeries that otherwise they would have waited in line for years if they lived long enough to have them at all. Women that were having severe uterine bleeding that needed hysterectomies and had been told it would be 3 years before they could even see a gynecologist. Children with gigantic tonsils and horrible sleep apnea as a result. And they were in line. And all the while, cardiovascularly, these children are being compromised. So, you know, the first people that showed up were Canadians. And I just stood there scratching my head when they showed up because I thought, nothing really needs to be said. This is what it is. I mean, these people, this healthcare system is a failure. It has failed these people. It is a complete failure. And then you read the undisputed accounts of patients in Great Britain who are being euthanized in their beds. So to make room for the patients waiting in ambulances outside in the emergency room queue. And these are not disputed accounts. No one on the National Health Service side is saying this is simply not true. This information is actually coming from them. Mm-hmm. As many as 200,000 patients in about a six-year period have been euthanized with something called the Liverpool Care Pathway. And the surgeons or the physicians in the National Health Service system are now being paid a bounty to get patients to agree to be euthanized rather than be treated at the hospital. So these are the facts. And then whenever I have that discussion, they always turn to Sweden. You know, all the industrialized countries in the world, you know, provide universal health care except the United States. Well, actually, no. And they turn to Sweden. You know, that seems to be where they all run and hide. And Reason Magazine just recently published an article that I've linked to on my blog if people want to see it. And no, I mean, the Swedes had a brief kind of just one-night stand with socialized medicine. They realized it didn't work and the long lines formed, and so they started privatizing. And there are big privatization efforts in Canada and Great Britain going on. The socialized medicine doesn't work, and the free market and the principles and the discipline that go along with the free market, that they've been shown countless times to always result in the best allocation of resources. It could not be any more important than it is in healthcare, because people's lives are at stake.
Absolutely agree with that. And the way they're creating this system, it's artificially creating a pipeline of doctors who aren't trained the same way as we were. You know, their mindset more is about paperwork and documenting and making sure you code correctly so the hospital can get billed. And it's about a 9-to-5 mentality. And there's no depth anymore. It's all about conveyor belt driven system, just to dot I's and cross T's and follow regulations. Healthcare, medicine is an art. It's not what they're trying to create right now. And what's maddening about it is that it is creating a two-tier system. The people who are writing these laws and who are proponents of it are not entering the system. They have money to opt out. Does that not drive you nuts?
Yes, you're exactly right. And the other thing that's happening to the doctor-patient relationship that was experimented with a little in the early 90s but is now back in full swing is doctors who, rather than working for their patient, work for someone else. They have a salary. So a doctor who has a salary, they figure out very shortly that I'm going to make this salary whether I, you know, see the next five patients or not. I'm going to make this salary whether I act like I care or not. I mean, my waiting room is going to be full regardless of what kind of service that I render. And I see the trend of hospitals buying physician practices as very troubling. A lot of the young people coming out of medical school are conditioned now to think that, well, I'll just go sign up and be an employee of a hospital and pick up my paycheck and not have to worry about all that money stuff without giving thought downstream to, well, what happens when the interests of my patient collide with the interests of my employer? Whose side am I going to take? Am I going to act in my self-interest and preserve my job, or am I going to act consistent with my oath and all for the patient? So I tell young people that are in medical school, I said, if you listen to one more thing that I say, never, ever go to work for a hospital. Never take a job as a hospital employee, because if you're working for the hospital, you're not working for your patient. And I see that as one of the most dangerous trends, and one of the trends that results in exactly what you said, the coders, the people who type on computer keyboards while their back is to the patient, just trying to get through the paperwork. And I see that as very troubling.
I absolutely agree. And it's not just the doctors, it's the nurses as well. I've spoken with, you know, registered nurses who have been in the profession for 20, 30 years who are now gone because they've been basically elbowed out by the system. It's not about patient care anymore. And they've moved on to case management and administrating and really just becoming super pencil pushers and no longer on the front line of patient care. And we've been replaced. They're trying to, and I had a conversation, and it really focused and crystallized this idea to me, a provider. They're calling all of us providers. They're totally negating the value and the sweat equity, blood equity the doctors put into their training. It doesn't matter anymore. You're one of the team. Get over it and just get along. And what that means is it causes the doctor just to be part of a groupthink. You can't be an individual. If you are, they'll make sure that you're an outlier or you're disruptive, and they're moving towards getting rid of people who actually really care about their patient.
Yeah, and some of the blood is on the hands of our fellow physicians because they have signed up for all of these plans. They have become hospital employees, and by virtue of that decision, they've left their patients completely disenfranchised. And I am so optimistic and hopeful now because I'm seeing that trend reverse. The physicians are beginning to see that they are not acting in a consistent manner, and it's time to make a change. And so we're seeing this wave of physician practices that are undergoing these 180-degree turns to these cash-based practices where they're not dealing with any of the hospital foolishness, and they're not dealing with electronic medical records. I don't have them in my facility, and where, you know, the people are getting back to actually providing health care. And I see this as a very, very positive thing. Certainly not what the federal government had in mind. I mean, Obamacare was meant to crush us, and mm-hmm. very paradoxically is creating a consumer market. You know, as these deductibles go through the roof, now, patients are paying more and more of their health care bills out of their pocket, and so they're demanding quality and value, and that is actually providing an opportunity for the physicians who can see this for what it is to jump on board and provide the service and the care that the patients and the market has demanded for some time now.
When we come back, I want to explore that because I think it's now time to talk about the day-to-day, how the meat of how people access the system and what it really means for their pocketbook. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that chronic nasal congestion, a decreased sense of smell, and asthma can be signs of allergies? Allergies are caused when the body is exposed to things you breathe in or eat that the body does not like. The body's immune system reacts and attacks it, what it perceives to be the enemy, even if it causes no harm, like pet dander or dust. This leads to swelling. In the nose, this causes congestion. In the bowel, it causes stomach bloating and diarrhea. In the lung, it causes shortness of breath and wheezing. And in the skin, it causes hives and itching. The first line of defense against allergy is avoidance. Dustproofing, washing pets, and keeping them out of the bedroom can help with environmental causes. For food allergies, keeping a diary of things eaten and reaction to them is helpful. Allergy testing is less time-consuming and is a safe and effective way to identify allergies. For a complete evaluation, you should see your allergy specialist.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking today with Dr. Keith Smith of the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. And before the break, Dr. Smith, we were really getting into the meat of this broken system. It's so easy. It's so simple. I mean, it's as if they don't want people to know that there's a separate path, which is much easier to access, much cheaper, and now it's becoming really obvious. It's got a very different standard of care. Quality is much higher in a system where both doctors and patients have skin in the game. Now, I know that your surgery center, that you've got a group, a mix of doctors, correct? So you have ENT, you have GYN, you've got everybody represented, am I correct?
Yes, just about every specialty, surgical specialty, is in our facility.
And they're also part owners, am I correct?
Yeah, we like for everyone who works there, almost everybody, to be an owner, because then they tend to treat the patients and the staff and the facility like they own it, not like a rental car.
Isn't that the difference? I mean, if you have skin in the game, you care about quality, you care about cost, you care about customer service, and it's all about providing state-of-the-art care because you have to compete with somebody. This is real time. You'd better be good or you'll be out of business.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, how can you do these procedures for these prices? And my answer is that because we're physician-owned, we've eliminated the most greedy and inefficient profit seeker from the equation, and that's the corporate, usually the not-for-profit hospital that charges many multiples of what we do. We basically looked at our costs to provide this service and added a marginal profit that allowed for equipment upgrades, equipment replacement, a small profit margin, and then I called the surgeons, a representative group of each specialty in, and asked them, you know, how much do you want to repair a rotator cuff? How much do you want for to do a septoplasty or place ear tubes. And I, you know, we wrote all these fees down. And as an anesthesiologist, I basically bill for my time. And I know how long each one of these surgeries takes by each one of these physicians. And there's 52 surgeons at our facility now. So, you know, it's simple math then. We put the prices online, and we had no idea where we were when we put the prices online. And to be frank, I'm a big fan of the School of Austrian Economics. I'm a student of that, and I realized that I don't know if my prices are right, because real and rational prices emerge from competitive activity. They're never imposed, which is why Medicare is a joke. I mean, those are arbitrary prices, and they can never be imposed, no matter how smart some central planner at Harvard thinks they are.
Mm-hmm.
So we are looking forward to having competitors in this space. So when we designed our website, I told the designers that I needed to be able to change these prices or add new procedures from my iPhone, because as new competitors came into the space, I needed to be able to react. And if somebody matches our prices, then I'm going to respond to that, either with a price change or with new value or quality in some way. So this is a lot of what is missing in healthcare, is true competition. And because it will do the same thing in healthcare industry that it's done in every other industry. It will lower the price, and it will improve the quality. And that's what the government and all their cronies have worked so hard to insulate themselves from, is true market capitalism. And it works, and we just decided that, you know, rather than give people an answer when they ask how much, we would just put it online and let everyone peruse it on their own, and maybe compare medical bills they've already received to what we have online.
How much? It's a loaded question, but when they do see your prices, or let's say they've done a procedure in the hospital, and they come to find out true costs and not added in, what do they say to you? I mean, are they really angry, or do they? I mean, these are people who potentially have gotten ripped off by a system that's so bloated that they got no value for their money. And what do they say? Do they say that I'm gonna drop my insurance, I'm going to shop around? Has anybody said they're going to change how they enter or access the system, knowing that there's an option?
Yeah, that is by far and away the most common response. Of course, people are angry if a hospital has bankrupted a family because their child needed a tonsillectomy, you know, that they were charged, you know, $12,000 to $18,000 for. Just for the facility, when our charge is around $3,000 for the whole thing. So, but yeah, people are angry when they realize, you know, that they're going to have to make payments for the rest of their lives for a procedure that they probably could have paid for out of pocket easily.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them think, well, you know, at these prices at your surgery center, why do I even have insurance? I mean, if I can afford surgery out of pocket without insurance, surely I can afford primary care out of pocket without insurance. And there are models that are springing up all over the place for primary care models that make sense in the marketplace.
And so, can I stop you for a second? These aren't concierge models anymore where you have to pay. Okay.
No, my favorite is Dr. Lee Gross in Sarasota, Florida. He's got a great model that people can look at on epiphanyhealthcare.net. And it's just brilliant. I think it's $80 a month. We'll get an individual or family all their primary care needs for a year.
That's incredible.
And he says, you know, it's less than most people's cell phone bill. So if people value their primary care needs, then it's very affordable. And he actually has people leaving the Medicaid rolls in Florida taking advantage of this plan, because as they found, many people have found on Medicaid, and people unfortunately are going to find on Obamacare, they're going to have a worthless piece of paper in their wallet that says they have coverage, but they're very unlikely to receive any care.
Now, that's another thing that I've noticed about the government-based crony type of system. You can't leave it very easily once you enter it. Now, I understand that if people who get subsidized have to pay their money back if their financial condition improves the next year, right?
Yeah, that is my understanding as well.
And Medicare folks, if they forgo their Medicare, they actually have to give up their Social Security payments too.
I believe that's right.
It's unbelievable.
Well, and again, it's intentional. I mean, these programs are meant to line the pockets of the various cronies that administer or benefit from them, but they're also meant to create a constituency and a sense of entitlement, so that the people remember who's got the power, and they don't want a free market in medicine. They don't want high quality. They don't want low prices. They want control, and they want to be able to funnel all of this loot to their pals like Newt Gingrich and his electronic medical records clients. So that's what this healthcare game is all about. People say, well, why does the government want to take over healthcare? Well, they're doing that under the auspices of their crony pals that are saying, hey, go take over healthcare so that you can go with the IRS and all of your guns and ammo and collect our insurance premiums for us, because people are not willing to buy them on their own anymore.
Oh, they can't afford to.
No, they can't afford to, but increasingly people do not want what the insurance carriers provide. And so they're, rather than provide a product or a service that's worthwhile, that's a value, they just go to Washington, D.C. and pay their legislator and say, go be my stick-up man and shake these people down for our premiums. And that's what Obamacare is.
Well, I think you've put that very eloquently again. Now, you mentioned something about Newt Gingrich. What's his dog in the hunt?
Newt Gingrich has been a fan and a lobbyist for electronic medical records for a very, very long time. His biggest client, I believe, is Alltel, and they are the biggest of all of the electronic medical records crowd. And they were at the table, and the physicians that do not purchase these systems and comply with these ridiculous demands called meaningful use, they're already pathetic. Medicare payments are reduced even further. So a big part of Obamacare was coercing physicians and hospitals to participate in this electronic medical records program. If electronic medical records were a really good idea, then the physicians would have been on board anyway.
That's true.
If there's a market for something, people are going to flock to it. And there is a market for it to a limited extent. But then again, the big electronic medical corporate players, they weren't satisfied that their product was being adopted or sold fast enough, so they went to their man, Newt Gingrich, and he's their lobbyist. And so they lobbied very hard to make the mandatory purchase of these systems and programs part of Obamacare. Now, the federal government was all for this, because part of their meaningful use was, and what that means is a physician is going that buys these programs is going to get some type of a rebate at some point for having done so. But in order to get that rebate, they have to basically betray all their patients and send all of this information and data they've collected on their patients to the federal government. So you can imagine that, the federal government's going to have everybody's medical records, and that was the reason that they were all behind this. So, and my point is, it's the Republicans and the Democrats. It's both sides. And, the insurance companies are just going to, go visit the office of whoever is in control and power. They don't care. I love what Lou Rockwell says. We have the stupid party and we have the evil party. And sometimes they get together and they do something stupid and evil. And we call that bipartisanship. So the idea that politics belongs in healthcare is very, very dangerous, and it's funny in a morbid way, but it's very dangerous. It's a disaster for patients.
Well, if you want to distill it down, it's going to kill people. That's what it's going to do. Bankrupt them and kill them.
it is going to bankrupt them and kill them. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that right now. We're seeing physicians whose waiting rooms are full of patients, where if the market were involved, there would not be a single patient in that particular physician's waiting room because he or she's not any good at what they do. And that's one of the reasons that we have such sporadic quality. So, the market is not at work. If a restaurant sold poisonous food, they would be out of business in a hurry. But we have licensed physicians. We have hospitals that are just awful. And they're doing a big bang-up business because they're signed up for some plan or they're part of the soup. They're part of the cartel. And they don't live and die by the quality of service and product that they deliver like everybody else in the marketplace has to. And the federal government is at the source of this whole problem.
I can actually attest to that. I've actually seen that list of top hospitals in the country, and some of the most highly ranked are the ones that are the most rigid at following the regulations. Every algorithm, every hoop that needs to be jumped through for quality assurance is followed ad nauseum. I've actually been in an OR where I did a tonsillectomy and I had to mark the neck. It's a tonsillectomy. You're not going to take out a toe or something, but this is the ridiculousness of the regulations that you have to put an X on the patient's face in order to follow their pre-surgery protocol. It's not about efficiency. It's just silly most of the time. But every hospital who does it lockstep gets a high ranking. And people need to understand it's not the PR anymore. It's about reality. And let's take a break and finish up. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that wellness and prevention is the key to living a long and healthy life? For example, common diseases such as acid reflux, high cholesterol, non-insulin-dependent diabetes, and high blood pressure in some cases are caused by poor nutrition. Scientific studies suggest the use of nutritional supplements, a healthy diet, and exercise can control and in some cases prevent disease. Use nutritional supplements that are formulated using good manufacturer practice standards. And remember to let your doctor know what you are taking, since it can react with prescription medication. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I think before the break, we were getting a really good education on the reality of the cost structure. I mean, you talked about the hospitals and the ability for them to charge just crazy prices. Why aren't they I understand now under Obamacare, they're actually realizing what it's like in the private practice setting, because they're getting hosed by Medicaid and Medicare. I think they were promised that they were going to get 30 million more people to come. And what they didn't understand is that their price, the fee schedule dropped for them. And they didn't get as many people or not getting as many people as they think they're getting. And now they're in financial straits because they built up these huge monster centers, only game in town, thought they could, really just wipe out their competition and scam everybody. And they're getting a dose of their own medicine now.
Yeah, and I would caution you before before you believe the poor mouthing propaganda that's coming out of these hospitals. The prices that we have online, I'm told by staffers in Washington, D.C., that the hospitals are paid two times or more what we have online by Medicare.
Oh.
And the prices we have online are actually less than what the hospitals are paid for by Medicaid. And the prices we have online are profitable. So keep in mind the big corporate hospitals were at the table writing this bill. And while they say that, you know, all the uninsured in the emergency rooms are just making them go broke, mm-hmm. there's a crane building on to every one of those emergency rooms, it seems like, in the United States. So, you know, if you're losing a lot of money, you don't build on to your loss leader.
That's a very good point.
So I do not believe for a second that now there are rural hospitals that are suffering. But it's because the big, giant corporate hospitals have so much money that they're engaged in hostile takeovers, usually in the form of buying physician practices. That's how they buy their referrals. And then they threaten these physicians once they're employees for, you know, not allowing any leakage outside of the family. All of the referrals have to stay in the hospital network with the hospital employees to maximize their revenue. And once you buy all the doctors in a small town, then the small town hospital does struggle because those doctors now work for the mothership, not the local, and they're not supportive of the local hospital. But the hospitals are, this whole Obamacare was meant to line their pockets. So I don't fall for any of their poor mouthing. And keep in mind, too, there's this uncompensated care scam and these disproportionate share hospital payments where, you know, a hospital will bill $100 for an aspirin and be paid $5. And even though they paid a penny mm-hmm. for the aspirin, they claim they lost $95, which helps maintain the fiction of their not-for-profit status. And then that amount goes into a ledger, which is thrown at the taxpayers, and we rebate them with uncompensated care payments. So, you know, hospitals get paid even when they don't get paid.
Wow.
So there are so many corporate and crony scams that are out there to make sure that these players who sat at the table and wrote this disastrous bill get their pockets lined. And so I always caution people that, you know, when you hear some hospital, you know, say they're having a hard time. You know, I look at not-for-profit hospital system here in Oklahoma that made $100 million last year. These people are making a lot of money.
Wow, that's on the backs of patients. It's on it's restriction of trade for independent physicians. I remember, now that I think about it, I do know that if I did a procedure in the office and versus if it was done in the hospital, that the reimbursement rate is completely different. You know, I get less if I do it in my office, but it doesn't take into consideration that I have to buy equipment, that I have to buy supplies. It doesn't matter. But the hospital gets reimbursed and paid for all of that. It's a system that's rigged to fail, basically, if you try to be your own person. So for the doctors out there who are on the fence and who really are unhappy but don't think that they have a place to go, that they can't do this, what advice would you give them?
Well, they can do it, and it's scary, and there's a transition, but it can be done. The physicians who are making this move are the ones that have such a distaste for the way that they're being forced to practice medicine, and they realize, you know, this is not what I signed up for, and everybody has got their breaking point, but one of the reasons we put our prices online and we're transitioning to a completely cash-based practice model, one of the reasons we did that was so that others could draw courage and strength and know that it could be done. And if we can do it at the level of a major surgical facility, then we would hope that that would inspire the family physician, the internist, the pediatrician, to do the same thing and just to turn their back on the old system and look their patients in the eye and take responsibility not only for their care, but also for the financial aspect of their care. Lee Gross, like I said, Epiphany Health is a model that should be investigated by anyone who's on the fence. And they'll understand that the beauty of Lee's model is that it provides for that transition. It's not an abrupt turn the switch off and go another way. It provides for that transition so that, you know, you continue to make a living and pay your bills and just begin that slow transition toward a practice model that's not tied into Obamacare. Imagine the relief that a physician would have if they realized that these politicians, you know, can do whatever they do. You know, they can have this SGR, they can cut mm-hmm. Medicare payments, they mm-hmm. can have all this Obamacare stuff, and that doesn't even apply to me. Imagine that, you know, you have the life and the practice of the average plastic surgeon, where you look patients in the eye and you say, this is how much this is going to be. That is the practice model that we really all should have, and it puts us in a competitive marketplace. And those of us that are confident and competent are actually anxious to compete and show what we're made of and demonstrate our quality. So I would encourage any physician that is on the fence to really take a hard look at it, because at the end of the game, their life will be much more free and much more gratifying.
I couldn't have said it better myself. There's something freeing about not looking over your shoulder. This is not a game that's rigged that you can win. Medicare, Medicaid, especially now with the Inspector General's office, the recovery audit situation, they are clawing back money by any means necessary, whether fair or not. And if you get tagged with an audit, you basically have to close your practice, even if you're innocent. There's no amount of funds that a private doctor can afford to fight the government when they decide they want to come after you. That's scary to me in itself. That makes me want to not be in that kind of system.
Yeah, I stopped taking federal money in 1992. Anesthesiologist, and I was recruited to Oklahoma City to do mostly cardiac surgery, and the last open heart surgery that I did with the surgeon is an anesthesiologist. I was paid $285. The last anesthetic I did for a Medicare beneficiary for a total knee replacement, I received $78. And I just decided, you know, I'm going to determine the value of my time. And if I'm wrong, then I'll accept the judgment of the marketplace, but I'm not going to accept the judgment of what my time is worth from some faceless bureaucrat. So I stopped taking Medicare money, and I provided care to patients free of charge rather than deal with that mess. And I've never looked back. It was the most liberating thing that I had done in my medical practice up until opening the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. It was so liberating. And I've got surgeons that I work with that have done the same thing, and they were very nervous about it. But even their patients like it because they don't feel that they're in that bureaucratic corporate soup with their doctor. They realize now that it's just the two of them, that there's not a bureaucrat in the exam room with them.
On that note, Dr. Smith, in the last seconds we have left, how can people reach you?
Our website is surgerycenterok.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Our prices are there. I have a blog there that explains lots of this stuff, and I'd encourage people to visit that if they've had surgery or if they're about to have surgery, and look at our prices. See if you can get a price from where you're going to go have your surgery and compare, and know that what we've listed online is all-inclusive, and we are profitable at those prices.
Well, I encourage everybody listening to share this information with their friends and their family, and I hope you will come back because it was an awesome experience talking with you.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be on.
Thank you, and thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.